WNYC is supported by Stitcher, offering the Stitcher mobile app. Listeners can access episodes of Alec Baldwin's Here's the Thing, as well as thousands of other podcasts, without downloading or syncing. The Stitcher mobile app can be found in the iPhone or Android app stores or at stitcher.com/WNYC.
Hi, this is Brian Lehrer. You're listening to WNYC On Demand. Podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads available when you want to listen at WNYC.org and iTunes.
Good morning and welcome to the Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Errol Lewis of the New York Daily News, in for Brian. The old saying, spare the rod and spoil the child, has been cited by generations of parents as the reason they hit their children. But sometimes what is portrayed as being firm can mask a much deeper case of child abuse. Stacy Patton, a PhD candidate at Rutgers University and professor at Montclair State University, has written a memoir about her experiences with corporal punishment growing up in Trenton, New Jersey. The book is called That Mean Old Yesterday, published by Atria Books, and Stacy is here to talk with me about it. Good morning, Stacy.
Good morning, Errol.
Well, just to be clear up front, you're not talking about the kind of spankings that comedians like Richard Pryor and Bernie Mac and Chris Rock tell jokes about. Your experience was much more severe and deadly serious, right?
Well, there's actually a thin line between the types of punishment that comedians like Richard Pryor and Bernie Mac joke about and what I experienced at the hands of my adoptive mother. I think what we're talking about is varying degrees of violence.
The abuse that you suffered at the hands of your adoptive mother, you strongly suggest, was really an undiagnosed mental illness at the base of it. And you describe your memories as a five-year-old being placed in her home.
Mm-hmm.
Is she still alive?
Yes, she is, from what I know.
Do you know if she ever got counseling or other treatment?
Probably not. She wasn't the type of person, nor did she come from the type of family context that believed in therapy. They were the types of people who went to church, who they were, you know, deeply committed Pentecostals. So you take everything to God in prayer. You come to church and you sing and you cry and you shout. But there are certain things that don't get talked about in those types of family contexts. So I doubt that she ever got help. And she probably believes that the way she raised me was the best way to raise a child.
Now, you used her real name, I imagine. Does she know this book is coming out?
No, I didn't use her real name, actually. I changed her name.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And the father, your father as well?
Yes. I've changed pretty much all the names and distorted some of the locations. But Trenton is the town that this happened in. And just for reasons of concern with my publishing house, but we did go ahead and change the names.
I've been learning something about Trenton's black community, which I didn't know very much about, not only through your book, but I've been talking lately with former Mayor David Dinkins, who comes from Trenton, New Jersey.
Uh-huh.
You talk at great length about the abuse suffered by you and others as having its roots in plantation slavery. And
mm-hmm.
in the book, you even refer to one of your foster homes as the Big House. Can you explain where that comes from?
Well, I wanted to talk about the issue of whipping black children or whipping children in general in a completely different way that hasn't really been probed before. As you mentioned earlier, it's a source of comedy within African-American communities. It's a source of conversation at hair salons and barbershops. Our ministers will stand in pulpits and say, spare the rod, spoil the child. The blueness of a wound cleanses away evil. A few years ago, there was a minister in Atlanta, Reverend Richard Allen, who advocated whipping black children in the churches. And there was an outrage from the black community when social workers came in and took the children out of the homes. And he was interviewed by Dateline, and he basically said that you can't raise a black child the same way you raise a white child in America, that somehow whipping is a uniquely black thing. But African Americans don't hold a monopoly on this behavior. And so I grew very frustrated with the ways that people were talking about it. Even social scientists and other academics, they use terms like black family violence or black pathology or cultural breakdown. And I understood from my own experience that there are historical nuances that have yet to be probed. There are some scholars who've kind of scratched the surface with it, particularly Nell Painter from Princeton, who wrote an essay called Soul Murder and Slavery, where she kind of talks about this connection. And Dr. Alvin Poussin, who's an African-American psychologist at Harvard, has dealt with this subject for quite a long time. But I wanted to explore the narratives of slaves and sort of trace the historical genesis of the practice. So my story is merely a reflection of this history. I'll give you an example. I read some slave narratives where black children would play a game called Hide the Switch, and one child would hide the switch, and whichever child found it got to whip the other kids with it. Now, when I was a child growing up in the 80s and 90s, we played the same game, except it was called Hot Peas and Butter, Come and Get Your Supper. And we didn't know it as children while we were running around trying to avoid this switch, that we were acting out something that has been transmitted from one generation to the next. I've heard black mothers particularly say, well, if I don't whip my child, then the police officer is going to do it, or the man will do it, and the consequences will be much harsher than, you know, if I do it. And so I read slave narratives of slave mothers who basically said, look, if, you know, I don't beat my child, then the consequences will be harsher at the hands of an overseer or master. So the more I studied plantation communities and read narratives, the more I understood that this was a behavior that was transmitted from one generation to the next. And this affected my own childhood, even though I didn't grow up on a plantation or during Jim Crow.
Is that the main focus of your PhD work?
No, actually. It was at first, but I ended up changing my topic during the second year, my second year at Rutgers. My dissertation is actually called Why Black Children Can't Grow Up. It looks at the construction of racial childhood between 1896 and 1940. And what I discovered that in order for me to understand how black people raise their children over time, I had to understand what black childhood meant at different points in history to the larger society. And America has always been sort of a hostile environment to raise black children. And black people have had to do things, certain adaptive things, to help their children survive or act as a buffer between a racist society and their children's souls. But in doing that, sometimes they've adopted some very dysfunctional practices, and one of them, I argue, is whipping their children, and not just physically whipping them, but some of the things that they say to them.
I'm Errol Lewis of the New York Daily News, in for Brian Lehrer. I'm talking with Stacy Patton, who's the author of That Mean Old Yesterday, a memoir that deals with a number of issues related to corporal punishment, to racism, and to raising children. Let me read part of the book. And let me tell callers or let me tell listeners that if you'd like to call in, we'll take your calls at 212-433-WNYC. That's 433-9692. On page 51 of the book, Stacy, I'm reading, and it says, just like slave mothers who whipped their children in front of masters and overseers, Mrs. Johnson whipped Ty, you're talking about a classmate, mm-hmm. to show that she recognized that her son had crossed the line of acceptability. Instead of talking to him and telling him how horrible his words were, she beat him into submission. But what about his humanity? And, you know, just those words alone, I think, don't convey the depth of what you're talking about. I mean, and I listeners and those who read the book, I think, will learn this. You're not just talking about a spanking. I mean, that quote is about a scene that I thought was really chilling. A child is misbehaving in elementary school. He calls the one white girl in the class a honky, I think, mm-hmm. was his offense. And the mother of the kid who did the name calling comes to the school and beats him with a rubber hose in front of the whole class.
Yes.
I mean, that was something you watched as a kid, and this wasn't considered unusual?
It was considered unusual to me as a child, but this school was a Lutheran school, so it was a religious school. And most of the children were black, and all the teachers were white. I actually used to joke and call it the missionary school. And the black parents, for the most part, some were middle class, some were working class parents, would actually give the teachers permission to whip their children if they got out of line. And at times, they would call the parents. So your parent, if your parent had to leave work and come deal with you, it wasn't going to be a pretty scene. So this boy's mother came up to the school and whipped us in front of us. This wasn't the first time that she had done it. And my own adoptive mother did it a few times in front of my classmates. Usually it was a swift backhand to my mouth or something. It was for petty things like talking in class or, you know, playing around, throwing spitballs, you know, things like that. And so when I saw that, it confirmed for me that, okay, I guess all black parents do this. When I went to church, if a child was sort of acting up in church, a mother would grab her child up and take that child to the bathroom, and you could sometimes hear the echoes. Or sometimes they just give you a swift pop right then and there while you're sitting during the middle of sermon. And other people would kind of look, and no one said anything. So I thought, okay, this is my plight as a black child. And for me, even though I knew it all hurt, and it didn't feel like love or protection as they said it was supposed to be, it just seemed very abnormal to me, but not to the people who were in the context of my community life, whether it was at church or our neighborhood or school life.
I know the book is not written as a self-help manual, or, mm-hmm. or it doesn't come across that way, but do you have advice for a little girl, a young Stacy Patton, who might today be going through what you went through?
Well, I am no psychologist. I don't even have children myself, but I think that little girls and boys need to know that they have a right to own their own bodies, and things that don't feel good to them, no matter who does it, whether it's a parent or a grandparent or a stranger, they should not stand for it. That means any kind of physical violence. And I know a lot of people will probably get upset with me for saying so, but whether it's a spank with a hand, whether it's a belt, it's a switch, it's an extension cord, a hanger, a shoe, harsh words, it's all wrong. It's not good, and it will have dire consequences. So I think that young children should be taught to assert their voices. You have a voice. You have an opinion. You have the right to tell someone, this does not feel good. I don't like this. Don't touch me this way. And the problem, I think, largely with African Americans, and don't get me wrong, black people are not the only people who whip their children. Many studies will show that, you know, low-income families tend to favor whipping their children. Christians, evangelical Christians, tend to do it. Southerners, Latinos, and other groups. But, you know, I'm specifically dealing with, you know, the African-American experience, that the one problem is that we don't see this as a form of violence. We call inflicting pain on each other sometimes and on our children as love and protection, when really it's all about control, whether it's that control is coming from the police or the state or parents over children. So the problem is that we need to have a different kind of conversation. Errol, if I hit you, I could go to jail. There are laws that protect me from assaulting you and vice versa. But when it comes to children, it's not so. So I think the conversation first has to change. We have to have a conversation with our children, with each other, about this problem, because it's affecting our communities, and it's devaluing black childhood. It's undermining their potential and possibilities.
Stacy, we're going to take a few calls, and we'll pick up in just a second with that thought. I'm Errol Lewis, in for Brian Lehrer. You're listening to WNYC. I'm Errol Lewis, in for Brian Lehrer. We're talking with Stacy Patton, a PhD candidate at Rutgers University and the author of That Mean Old Yesterday, published by Atria Books. And we're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. Nancy from Manhattan, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. Nancy, I would like to say thank you for writing this book because I feel like this is an insightful piece of literature. I grew up with the same upbringing and the disciplinary behavioral patterns that you're discussing now. The difference is I embraced it. I do think that my mother was very heavy-handed. I experienced it all, the humiliation. God forbid she had to come to school because I was, you know, laughing or I didn't bring in a homework assignment. So her reputation was everything in the community. And to me, as a Christian young lady who should be an example to the worldly kids, that was just an absolute no-no. Yes, I experienced the discipline, the slave master's form of discipline, the corporal punishment. If I went south, I went and picked out the stem of the branch, picked off the leaves, and you would think I was raised back in the 40s, and I'm only 35. So I, too, agree that there is a mentality that we need to discuss, but we need a balance. I find that if you look at the nanny, and you find these kids 2 and 3 years old, when you have the mother and father sitting there talking about they don't know how to control their three-year-old, I'm like, one swift smack to that behind will get them in line. So I, too, have embraced some of the slave master's mentality in terms of corporal punishment, but I find it effective because kids, if they don't understand no and stop and sit down and do as I say because I'm telling you because it's in your interest, then you need to demonstrate who is the head of this house.
Thank you for your call, Nancy. Stacy, I imagine you've heard that before.
Yes, I have, actually. And I usually get into these debates with older black women, and the discussion usually ends with, do you have children? And I say, no. And so they say, oh, see, wait till you have kids. You'll rethink your whole philosophy. But the issue is that we live in a very violent society, and there are countries around the world where hitting children is against the law. And it's hard to change old behaviors once it's been embraced. And once you've been told, well, it worked for me, it won't kill you. And I always think that violence is an expression of impotence. It's an expression of frustration, of having lost control. That's why people hit. That's why they get violent with each other. It takes a lot more work and an ability to be articulate to sit down and talk with a child. Many people believe you don't have to have democracy in a home where there are children, that what I say goes. There's no questioning. There's no opinion. There's no voice from the child. Your child should be seen and not heard. Answer when called. Speak when spoken to. So we're talking about value here. If every time we got angry with a coworker or a boss, and we wanted to assert our control, we hit them, we'd have some problems. But it's because we hold children in a different value. For example, in a lot of West African traditions, and I bring this up because there are some people who talk about West African child-rearing practices. Well, if you read old missionary reports or narratives, depending on what village you were in, if a child stole something, they'd cover the child in banana peels and march them around and say, "Look at this little thief." Or they use the gods to invoke shame and fear if a child did something wrong. But in many West African traditions, children were seen as having mystical powers or a closer relationship with the gods. There wasn't go pick a switch off the tree and, whip that child with it. So I think it's about what our society says about the value of children. It's a whole range of other issues as well, single parenting, frustration time, work, stress, all those different elements that kind of play into it.
Well, let me ask you this. As far as violence in our society, the book opens with a very dramatic scene where you've acquired a 9mm pistol near NYU while you're an undergraduate, and you leave the dorm and you go back to the house in New Jersey where you used to live with the intention of killing your adopted parents. Mm-hmm. And I not to spoil the reading experience for anybody, but the plan doesn't go as planned.
No.
But what struck me is this took years after you'd been removed from their custody. I mean, mm-hmm. you'd eventually gone to a police station the social service machinery worked imperfectly, but it worked, mm-hmm. and it removed you from their custody. Have you been scarred for life if, you know, years later, something that violent is what you almost did?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I still have physical scars that will never go away on my face, on other parts of my body. I have deeper emotional wounds that I've gotten lots of therapy for. And, you know, when you go through war sometimes, you do what you have to do to survive. And sometimes you disassociate so that you can protect yourself. You find different ways to cope. But nobody told me that once I got out of that house, once I got out of the war, that another one would begin in my mind and that I would deal with anger, I would deal with nightmares and post-trauma, a whole range of different issues. And it's important you ask that question because I'm sure you've probably heard of Dr. Joy Leary. She wrote a book called Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome, and she talks about the multi-generational dimensions of trauma in Black culture, that during slavery we had certain adaptive behaviors that we took on so that we could survive. And then when slavery ended, we had to deal with terrorism during the Jim Crow period and many different forms of psychic and extra-legal violence. And we've had to deal with this as African Americans from one generation to the next. And now what's happened is, you know, and this is a vestige of slavery, a vestige of racism, is that we do certain things that cause us to turn on each other. And one of them is through whipping our kids. It's, you know, we express yeah. that violence onto our own people, to those who we love. And when we don't deal with the anger, when we don't deal with the pain, when we don't talk about it, when we just say, be silent or forgive and forget, live and let live. You know, African Americans are often made to feel like we're hostile or angry when we talk about slavery.
Stacey, let me take a couple more calls. I think
okay.
I can sneak in one more.
Sure.
Jonathan from Manhattan, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
What's your story, sir?
Well, I'm not African American. I'm from the north of England, and you know, one of these days I will probably read her book. I think it's absolutely accurate. The scars do not go away. Myself and my brother, the hands of my father, went through terrible things, but we were not taken away because in those days, I'm in my late 50s. You know, that was accepted. It was accepted, and my father didn't take a birch, didn't take a stick, he used his fists. And, you know, I remember one time my brother ran away, and he was 16 at the time in England. You know, you were still under your parents' control up to you were 18, and when they brought him back to the home, the police said, look, you know, he's made accusations to say that you would beat him to unconsciousness. My father laughed and said, you know, kids make up stories. Come on, have a drink, and, you know, it's a cold night, and be on your way. And the police came in, had a drink, and left because, you know, it wasn't really such a thing to be taken seriously. Now it's against the law. But, yes, scars exist. My brother almost took his life almost 15 years ago, and, you know, it doesn't go away. It doesn't go away.
Thank you for that call, Jonathan. Akini, you are a public school teacher.
Yes, I am.
And your perspective is?
Well, when I came into the public schools, I was never hit as a child, and that was totally foreign to me. I don't have children either. But coming into the schools, I was sort of shocked by the system of violence that's sort of reinforced between, you know, teachers as well as parents, and some of that's coming from the families themselves. And I think there's a real lack of understanding sometimes of the child development factor, that there's behaviors that children have when they're 6 months, 3 months, 5 years, 10 years, 12 years old that are fairly typical behaviors, and to have, you know, compassion and understand that. And I'm not saying I ever saw a teacher hit a child. Nothing like that happened. Absolutely not. But I'm just talking about the very strict and heavy-handed discipline sometimes that comes from, you know, the school staff and is reinforced by the parents. And that really is about control, like Stacey said, and not about really understanding what's going on in children's mind and allowing them to make forgivable mistakes and processing that, doing more processing and social character education, that kind of thing.
Thank you for that call, Akini. And finally, we have Cecil?
Cecil
from Skagway.
Yes.
That's my brother.
That's your brother.
Hi, Cecil.
Real quick,
hey,
Cecil.
Stacey.
Hello.
Yeah, I just wanted to let everyone know, I mean, this is a must-read. I have been eagerly excited. As Stacey would tell you, this has been going on years and years. I can't wait. Stacey, I wanted to let you know I love you, and I cannot wait to September 4th.
Love you too, little bro.
Okay. And a fitting note on which to end. Thank you very much for joining me. And we'll look for the book. It's going to be in bookstores in a week or two.
Yeah, it's coming out on September 4th, but you can also visit my website, www.stacyPatton.com, and you can also pre-order through my website via Amazon.com.
We'll have a link on the WNYC website.
Great.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Errol.
The book is called That Mean Old Yesterday, published by Atria Books.
Thanks for listening to WNYC On Demand. Please check out our other programs at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This free service is made possible by our listeners. Become a member of WNYC today.